Instead of throwing a guard around the chicken house, we would use the stakeout approach. Stakeout is a technical term which we use in this business. Webster defines stake as a length of wood or metal pointed at one end for driving into the ground. It comes from the Anglo-Saxon word staka, akin to the Danish stock. Out is defined as away from, forth from, or removed from a place, position, or situation. It comes from the Middle English ut. That's about as technical as I can make it. In layman's terms, a stakeout is basically a trap. You leave the chicken house unguarded, don't you see, and watch and wait and wait and watch until the villain makes his move. And then you swoop in and get him. It's pretty simple, really, when you get used to the terminology. At dark, me and Drover staked the place out. We hid in some tall weeds, maybe 30 feet from the chicken house. Time sure did drag. The first couple hours, we heard coyotes howling off in the distance. Drover kept looking around with big eyes. I thought he might try to slip off to the machine shed, but he didn't. After a while, he laid his head down on his paws and went to sleep. I could have kept him awake. I mean, pulled rank and demanded that he stay awake. But I thought, what the heck, the little guy probably needed to sleep. I figured I could keep watch and wake him up when the time came for action. Then I fell asleep. But the funny thing about it was that I dreamed I was awake, sitting there and standing guard. I kept saying, "Hank, are you awake?" And Hank said, "Sure I am. If I was asleep, you and I wouldn't be talking like this, would we?" And I said, "No, I suppose not." Seems to me it's kind of a waste of good sleep to dream about what you were doing when you were awake. But that's what happened. I heard something squawk, and I said, "Hank, what's that?" "Nothing." "You sure?" "Sure, I'm sure. You're wide awake and watching the stakeout, aren't you?" "I think so, yes." "Then stop worrying." The squawking went on, and the next thing I knew, Drover was jumping up and down.
"Hank! Oh, Hank! He's back! Murder! Help! Blood! We fell asleep! Oh, my gosh! Hank, wake up!"
"Huh? I ain't asleep." And right then my eyes popped open, and I woke up. Dang the luck, I was asleep. I was afraid of that. We dashed out of the weeds and found a body south of the chicken house door. The M.O. was the same. There's another technical term, M.O. It stands for modus of operationis, which means how it was done. We shorten it to M.O. A pattern began to emerge. The killer had struck twice, and both times he had killed a white leghorn hen. Actually, that might not have been a crucial point because there weren't any other colored hens on the place, but I mention it to demonstrate the kind of deep thinking that goes into solving a case of this type. You can't overlook a single detail, even those that don't mean anything. But the most revealing clue was that the murderer hadn't dragged his victim off. That meant that he hadn't killed for food, but only for the sport of it. In other words, we had a pathagorical killer on the loose. This was very significant, the first big break in the case. At last, I had an M.O. that narrowed the suspects down to coyotes, coons, skunks, badgers, foxes, rats. It hadn't eliminated anybody, and I was right back where I started. I hunkered down and studied the body. It was still warm. Warm chicken. My mouth began to water, and I noticed a rumble in my stomach. This fresh evidence was pointing the case in an entirely new direction. Drover, why don't you run on and get some sleep? You've had a tough day.
Oh, I'm awake now.
You look sleepy.
I do.
Yes, you do. Awful sleepy. Your eyes seem kind of baggy.
Don't you think we should sound the alarm?
Not just yet. I need to do a little more study on the corpse. My stomach growled real loud. Drover perked his ears.
What was that?
I didn't hear anything. He waited and listened. I concentrated on making my stomach shut up. You can do that, you know, control your body with your mind. Only it didn't work this time. My stomach growled again, sounded like a rusty gate hinge.
What is that?
Rigor mortis. Chickens do that. Run along now and get some sleep. We've got a big day ahead of us.
Well, okay.
He started off and heard my stomach again. He turned around and twisted his head and stared at me.
Was that you?
Don't be absurd. Good night, Drover. He shrugged and went on down to the gas tanks. I gave him plenty of time to bed down, get comfortable, snap at a few mosquitoes, and fall asleep. My mouth was watering so much that it was dripping off my chin. When everything was real quiet, I snatched up the body, loped out into the horse pasture, and began my post-mortem investigation. It was very interesting. I didn't hurry this part of the investigation. I labored over my work for several hours and fell into a peaceful sleep. When I awoke, it was bright daylight. I could feel the rays of the sun warming my coat. I glanced around, trying to remember where I was, and when I figured it out, my heart almost stopped beating. I was lying in the center of a circle of white feathers, and several more feathers were clinging to my mouth and nose. My belly bulged, and Sally Mae was standing over me, a look of horror on her face.
Hank! You're the one! Oh, Hank, how could you?
Huh? No, wait, there had been a mistake. I'd only... Well, you see, I just... The chicken was already dead, and I thought... Hey, listen, I could explain everything. It must have looked pretty bad, me lying there in the midst of all that damaging evidence. Sally Mae headed down to the house, swinging her arms and walking fast. I didn't know what to do. If I ran, it would look bad. If I stayed, it would look bad. No matter what I did, it would look bad. Maybe eating the darn chicken had been a mistake. I was still sitting there, mulling over my next course of action, when Sally Mae returned with her husband.
There, look! You see who's been killing the chickens? Your dog!
I whapped my tail against the ground and put on my most innocent face. Loper and I had been through a lot together. Surely he would know that his head of ranch security wasn't a common chicken-killing dog. He had to trust me. But I could see his face harden, and I knew I was cooked. Hank, you bad dog! I never would have thought you'd do something like this. I didn't. It was a mistake. I'd been framed. Come here, Hank. I crawled over to him. He picked up the chicken head, which was lying on the ground. I hadn't eaten it because I found that beaks are hard to swallow. He tied a piece of string around the head and tied it around my neck. There, you wear that chicken head until it falls off. Maybe that'll help you remember that killing hens doesn't pay around here. They left, talking in low voices and shaking their heads. I tried to bite the string and get that thing off my neck, but I couldn't do it. I was feeling mighty low, mighty blue. I was ashamed of myself, but also outraged at the injustice of it. I headed down to the corral to find Drover. Instead, I ran into Pete the Barn Cat, just the guy I didn't want to see. He was sunning himself in front of the saddle shed. In other words, loafing, which is what he does about 95% of the time. The mice were rampant down at the feed barn, but Pete couldn't work a mouse patrol into his busy schedule. It interfered with his loafing. That's a cat for you. He saw me before I saw him. He yawned, and a big grin spread across his mouth.
Nice necklace you've got on, Hanky. Where could a fellow buy one of those?
You have to be in the mood for Pete, and I wasn't. I made a dive for him, and he escaped instant death by a matter of inches. He hissed and ran, and I fell in right behind him. I chased him around the corrals. He hissed and I barked. There were several horses in the west lot, and they all started bucking and kicking up their heels. It was my lousy luck that Slim happened to be riding one of them. 2-year-old colt, as I recall, and he started yelling, "Hank, get out of here! Whoa, Sinbad! Easy, Bronc!" Nobody around here ever yells at the cat. Why? I don't know. I just don't understand. I gave up the chase. I would settle accounts with Pete some other day. I loped over to the gas tanks, looking for Grover. He heard me coming, sat up, saw the chicken head around my neck, turned tail, and sprinted for the machine shed as fast as he could go. "Grover, wait, it's me, Hank!" He kept going. I guess he didn't want to get involved with a criminal. I went down to the gas tank and laid down. Boy, I felt low. I tried to sleep, but didn't have much luck. That chicken head was starting to smell, and it reminded me all over again of the injustice of my situation. Off in the distance, I could hear Pete. He was still up in the tree he had climbed to escape my attack, and he was singing a song called "Mamas, Don't Let Your Puppies Grow Up to Be Cow Dogs." Now and then, he would stop singing, and I would hear him laughing. Really got under my skin. I lay there brooding for a long time. Then I pushed myself up, and all of a sudden it was clear what I would have to do. They had left me no choice. I took one last look at my bedroom there under the gas tank and started up the hill. As I passed by the machine shed door, Drover stuck his head out.
"Psst! Where are you going?"
I trotted past. "I'm leaving." He crept out, glanced around to see if anybody was watching, and came after me.
"Leaving?"
"That's right. I quit. I resign."
"You can't do that."
"You just watch me. This chicken head was the last straw. I'm fed up with this place. I'm moving on."
"Moving? Where are you going?"
"I don't know yet. West, toward the setting sun." He was quiet for a minute, then...
"I'll go with you."
"No, you won't."
"How come?"
"Because, Drover, I'm starting a new life. I'm gonna become an outlaw."
"An outlaw?"
"That's right. They've driven me to it. I tried to run this ranch, but it just didn't work. I'm going back to the wild. One of these days, they'll be sorry."
"But hey..."
"Goodbye, Drover. Take care of things. I'm sorry it has to end this way. Next time we meet, I won't be Hank the cow dog. I'll be Hank the outlaw. So long." And with that, I trotted off to a new life as a criminal, outcast, nomad, and wild dog. I made my way north, away from headquarters and up into the canyon country. If a dog was going to go back to the wild, that was the place to go. Funny how good it felt walking away from everything. The job, the responsibility, the constant worry. When I crossed the road there at the mailbox, I felt free for the first time in years. On the other side of the road, I stopped and looked back. Drover had followed me about 100 yards and stopped. He was watching. Maybe he thought I would change my mind and go back. Maybe he was waiting for me to tell him to come on. I didn't. I ran my eyes over the ranch I had loved and protected for so many years, waved farewell to Drover, and went on my way, singing this little song.
Take a notion to swim me an ocean, or climb me a mountain, or kill me a bear. I'm never distracted or frightened or acted upon by your everyday worries or cares. But how do I do it? I don't know. I just don't have any idea. I just do it. because of my job as the head of security. I must fight monsters and coyotes and coons. I rarely get whipped, seldom bloody my lip on the fists of subversive and criminal goons. But how do I do it? I don't know. I just don't have any idea. And speaking of women, did I think to mention that I have a lady not too far from here? Miss Beulah the Collie, she loves me by golly and often has spasms when I get too near. But how do I do it? I don't know. I just don't have any idea. I just do it. I reckon if God was inventing a bod that was certain to drive all the women insane, he'd probably demand that I sit down and hand him a list of the things that have brought me my fame. But how do I do it? I don't know. I just don't have any idea. Specific, but it could be that I'm just terrific.
Not bad, huh? Well, I wondered how Loper and Slim and Sally Mae would react when they figured out that I had resigned and moved on. I had an idea they'd be sorry. They'd realize how they'd done me wrong and misjudged me and accused me of terrible things I didn't do. I mean, all I did was eat a dead chicken, and she wasn't a bit deader when I finished than when I started. Maybe they'd cry. Why not? A lot of people cry over their dogs. They tell me that when Lassie and Rin Tin Tin were big on TV, people used to cry when they thought Lassie was in a jam he couldn't get out of, and when Rennie had got himself chewed up by a bear, and it appeared that he wouldn't pull out of it. People never realize just how important a dog is until it's too late. In life, we get yelled at and cursed and kicked around, but when we're gone, people wish they had us back. Yeah, they'd cry when they found out that old Hank had moved on. And they'd cry even harder when it dawned on them that their ranch was being protected, and I mean so-called protected, by Pete the Barn Cat and Drover the Chicken-Hearted. That would wring tears out of a Bodark post. Yep, they'd cry, and they'd say, "Oh, I wish we had Hanky back. He had his faults, but he was a good, honest dog. It won't be the same around here without him." Around sundown, they'd walk out into the pasture and call, "Here, Hank! Come on, Hanky! Here, boy!" And you know what? I'd be up in them canyons, eating fresh meat instead of co-op dog food, listening to the sounds of nature, and enjoying peace and freedom. I'd hear them calling my name, begging me to come back, but I wouldn't go. They'd had their chance. I'd tried to go straight and live within the law, but they'd driven me to drastic measures, driven me to follow the Owl Hoot Trail and become an outlaw. Next morning, they'd get in the pickup and go driving around, checking all the spots where I used to hang out. The sewer, the gas tanks, the corral, the creek. But I wouldn't be there. Then, they'd drive over to the neighbor's place. "Anybody seen Hank? We've lost our cow dog." "No? Well, we're offering a $500 reward to anyone who finds him." Then they'd start driving through the pastures, honking the horn and calling, "Hank, here, boy, come home. Hank, we miss you. We're sorry for everything we've done. We'll do anything if you'll just come home." Laying off in them canyons, I'd hear them calling. Peeking through the rocks, I'd see them driving slow across the pasture. But I wouldn't go back. Injustice had changed me, turned me bitter, and snapped something inside me. Anyway, that's what I was thinking about when I turned my back on the ranch forever and hit the Owl Hoot Trail. They say you're not supposed to feel good about other people's misfortunes, but I got to admit that it gave me considerable wicked pleasure to know that I had left them weeping, and that with me gone, the ranch was going to fall apart real quick. That's the kind of satisfaction that dog food and a flea collar just won't buy. Must have been late afternoon when I reached the wild country, up near the head of one of them canyons. It was pretty hot down there, not much breeze. The canyon walls rose up 100 feet in the air, and a couple of buzzards floated in the sky overhead. I was pretty tired, and my feet was kind of sore from walking over the rocks, so when I found a little spring of water, I jumped in and rolled around. It was pleasant, but not nearly as satisfying as a roll in the sewer. That was one thing about my old life that I would miss. I always looked forward to the middle of the day when me and Drover used to go down to the place where the septic tank overflowed, hop in and splash and roll around with our paws in the air, and then get out and have a good old-fashioned head-to-tail shake. You can say what you want about spring water, but if you ask me, it ain't near as refreshing or healthful as good old septic tank water. And I always liked the deep, rich, manly smell of it. A dog ought to smell like a dog, seems to me. And I never had no desire to be one of those town dogs that get their hair clipped and their toenails painted and get sprayed all over with that stinking perfume stuff. Perfume gives me a headache and stops up my nose. Anyway, that spring pool wasn't as refreshing as a sewer would have been, but I managed to cool myself down and satisfy my thirst. I wallered around in it for 10 or 15 minutes, and when I was ready to get out, I noticed that I had some company. Those buzzards that had been floating around the rim of the canyon had dropped in for a visit. Two of them. They were perched on the ground near the edge of the pool, staring at me. I showed them some fangs right away. I mean, I try to be friendly and all that, but there's just something about a buzzard that don't sit right with me. Maybe it's because they're so ugly. Looks ain't everything in this life. Unless you happen to look like a turkey buzzard. And then they're pretty crucial. It's hard to be friendly to something that ugly. I gave them a growl. They bent their necks forward and stared at me. Then Wallace, the older of the two, said, "We thought maybe you was dead." Thinking gets birds like you into trouble. Run along, I got things to do. They didn't move, so I stepped out on dry land and shook myself. Throwed water all over Wallace. He dropped his wings and took a couple of steps backwards.
"He ain't dead, Junior. You made a mistake."
I tell you, he's dead, Pa. I just know he is.
Junior seemed to have a little stutter problem.
When I pick up a signal, something's dead. Remember the ground squirrel? I picked him up at 500 yards, and what did you say?
Wallace frowned and squinted one eye.
"I don't recall. What did I say?"
You said I was seeing things. You said my eyes was hooked up to my
belly button, uh-huh. It's coming back now.
You said I didn't have enough experience, and when I got as old as you, maybe I'd mount to something.
I was trying to be optimistic, son. You can't blame me for that.
Wallace burped, and the whole canyon went sour.
Dang, I'm hungry.
I'm telling you, Pa, he's dead. I picked up the signals.
They moved a little closer and looked me over real careful.
Junior, if he's dead, how come he crawled out of that water hole?
Beats me.
And how come his eyes are open and he's looking back at us?
It beats me, but he's dead.
Maybe so, son. I never claimed to know everything.
I did too, yesterday morning.
All right, I take it back. Hey!
His head shot up in the air.
I'm starting to pick up the signals now. He is dead, you're right.
I told you so.
They came towards me. I watched them and lifted my lip on the right side.
Whoa, Junior, hold it, son. Did you see that lip go up? Did you see them teeth? Looky there, son. See what I'm saying?
Junior stretched out his skinny neck and studied me for a minute.
That don't mean nothing. I'll prove it.
And with that, Junior marched up and pecked me on the head. As you might imagine, I didn't care for that, and I took a snap at Junior and relieved him of a double handful of feathers. The buzzards went running for cover. The old man tripped over a rock, went down, hopped up, and kept going, looking back over his wing the whole time.
I told you he wasn't dead.
But, Pa.
I told you once. I told you twice. I told you three times.
But, Pa.
You're gonna keep fooling around and get us hurt one of these days.
But, Pa, what's that around his neck?
Huh?
They were back to looking at me again.
That's where the signals are coming from. The thing around his under his chin.
Oh, Wallace's eyes popped open, and a smile came over his beak.
I believe you're right, son. It's a chicken head.
Wallace put on a pleasant face for a buzzard and came waddling over to me.
Hi there. You new around here?
Maybe.
I'm Wallace. This here's Junior. And we was just... What would you take for that chicken head?
What you got? They went into a huddle. Then the old man said,
tell you what, neighbor, times is hard right now. My eyes is going bad on me, and Junior's a little on the simple-minded side of things, and we haven't had a good meal in 3 days. We sure are hungry, and we sure could use a chicken head right now till our luck changes. We'd have to take it on credit is the long and short of it.
We'd do you a favor sometime.
Wallace nodded his head.
Yes, we would. We surely would, because we never forget a good deed.
I thought that over. Seemed to me that trading a stinking chicken head for a buzzard's goodwill was about an even swap. You couldn't take either one of them to the bank. Tell you what, boys, if you can chew the string in half, I'll let you have the head. Their eyes lit up, and Junior started towards me. Only the old man slapped him across the mouth with his wing.
I'll handle this. You just stand by for further orders.
Wallace waddled over and squinted at the string. He leaned out his neck and took a bite. Got my ear instead of the string. I yelped and jumped away.
I'm sorry, Dern, I'm sorry. It's my eyes. Let me try again.
All right, try again, but leave the ear where it sits. He tried again, and this time he found the string and chewed it in half. Just as soon as the head hit the ground, Junior made a dive for it, swooped it up in his beak, and ran off. The old man went after him, flapping his wings and stumbling over rocks and things.
Junior, you come back here! Junior!
They fought over it for 5 minutes. First Junior had it, then Wallace had it, then they got so busy fighting that it fell to the ground. Chicken Hawk swooped down and picked it up, and that was the last they saw their supper. It stopped the fight.
See what you done?
You done it, because you're so greedy.
It was about dark by this time, so I found me a comfortable spot and curled up for the night. Junior and Wallace argued back and forth for another hour, until at last they shut up, and we had some peace and quiet. I was drifting off to sleep when I heard Junior's voice.
Pa?
What?
I'm hungry.
You ought to be after the way you acted.
Pa?
What?
You ever eat a dog?
I raised my head.
The first son of a buck that comes creeping around me in the night's gonna get his legs tore off, one by one. Didn't hear another sound out of them birds for the rest of the night, and they didn't stay for breakfast. Actually, there wasn't any breakfast. And then there wasn't any lunch. Long towards the middle of the afternoon, it occurred to me that if I wanted to eat, I would have to get out and hustle some grub. I left camp and lit out north, figuring I would scout the head of the canyon. I hadn't gone very far when I stopped dead in my tracks. I heard something, kind of a clanking sound. I slipped behind a bush and studied the country ahead. I kept hearing that sound, but I couldn't see what was causing it. Then my sharp cowdog eyes picked up some movement. At first glance, it appeared to be a medium-sized, bushy-tailed dog stumbling around without a head. Well, that didn't make any sense. I'm not so easily fooled. My years of security work told me that there was more to this thing, so I decided to investigate. A dog without a head? I didn't believe it. I moved closer and pieced together the following details. 1. The subject wasn't a dog. He was a coyote. Age, approximately 3 years and 5 months. Weight, 37 pounds. Length, including tail, 43 inches. 2. He was not a he. He was a she, meaning a female of the species. Rather homely, as coyotes tend to be, but not without charm. 3. Subject had stuck her head into a Hawaiian punch can with the top cut out. The can had lodged around her ears and gotten stuck there, leaving her blind and helpless. One of the first rules you learn as a cow dog is that cow dogs and coyotes don't mix. They're natural enemies. The former devoted to protection of home, livestock, and civilization. The latter devoted to a dissolute style of life based on raiding, depredation, and uncivilized forms of behavior. In other words, I had every reason to walk away and leave the coyote to her fate. A slow, lingering death. In this business, you can't be sentimental. Still, death inside a Hawaiian punch can seemed too cruel even for a coyote. I just couldn't walk away and leave her to die, even though I had a feeling that if I helped her, I would regret it. Afternoon, ma'am. My name's Hank the Cow Dog. Appears to me that you're in distress. She heard my voice. She bristled and tried to run away. Didn't go far, though. Ran into a rock. She stopped, lay flat on the ground, and didn't move. I recognized this as the natural sneaky reaction of the coyote breed. When you catch them red-handed, if they can't run away, they'll lie flat on the ground. I suppose they think they're blending into the surroundings. It's hard to say what they think. Coyotes are different. You don't need to be afraid, ma'am. I'm here to help you. She didn't say a word or move a muscle. Lie still, and I'll see if I can get that thing off your head. I don't know how much of this she understood. Coyotes don't speak the same language as dogs, don't you see? Some of the words are similar, and some aren't. Modern Doglish and the coyote dialect both come from the same linguistic root, which was the ancient language spoken by our common ancestors many years ago, before the species split into Dogus domesticus and Dogus coyotus. This is pretty technical stuff, and I don't want to bore anyone, but it's important that you understand these things. Well, it just so happened that I was fluent in the coyote dialect, so I decided to address the lady in her own language. Me not hurt Missy Coyote. Me friend. Me help Missy. Missy have trouble.
You not hurt?
Her voice echoed inside the can. Me not hurt. Me help. Missy Coyote lie still. Not move. Hank fixy real quick. For a long time she didn't speak. Then,
Missy lie still.
It
was important that I got the point across to her that I was a friend, don't you see? Because it would have been typical coyote behavior for her to jump up once I got the can off her head and tear off one of my ears. They're just a little bit crazy, them coyotes, and you got to be careful. Anyway, she lay still while I hooked my front paws around the can and started pulling. I pulled and I tugged and I strained and I grunted, and finally the can popped free. That's when I got my first look at Missy Coyote's face. I'm not one to gush or be overwhelmed. Let's get that straight right here. My years in the security business have trained me to look upon most things as mere facts. Facts to be gathered and studied and analyzed. I mean, I'd seen women before. Lots of them. Scads of them. I'd been through times in my life when women were hanging all over me, and I literally couldn't take a step without bumping into an adoring female. If you're a cow dog, you get used to this. It's common knowledge that cow dogs are just a little bit special. Read your dog books. Ask anyone who knows about dogs. Check it out with the experts. They'll tell you that women flip over cow dogs. What I'm saying, and I'm just trying to put it all into perspective, don't you see, is that I wasn't one of these dogs that chased women all the time or even had much interest in them. But you know what? When I seen Missy Coyote's face with those big eyes and that fine tapered nose, I got weak in the legs and kind of swimmy in the head. She was the, by George, prettiest thing I'd ever laid eyes on. Missy Coyote, pretty. She was still blinking her eyes against the glare of the sun. Guess she'd been in that can for a day or two. When she got used to the sunlight, she looked me over real close. Then she smiled. I melted. I mean, I actually fell over and started kicking my legs in the air. It was an unconscious, unwanted response, not the kind of reaction you'd expect from a professional cow dog. But, as I've pointed out before, I was only flesh and blood. Missy didn't understand my spasm, I reckon, and she came over. Had her head cocked to the side like this. Oh, well, you can't see. She had her head cocked to the side.
What wrong? You sick?
Yeah, I'm sick, all right. I need to get out of here. I struggled to my feet and tried to leave, but my back legs didn't function.
Not leave. Stay. Tell name.
I was sure she could hear my heart beating. I could. It was about to take the top of my head off, to be exact. Me, Hank. Her eyes brightened.
Pretty name. Hunk.
Not Hunk, Hank.
Yes, Hunk. Pretty name. Me like. Hunk.
Whatever you say.
Me called girl who drink blood.
Girl who drink blood?
You like?
There wasn't a whole lot of poetry in that name, seemed to me. Her old lady, or whoever named her, must have been a real barbarian. Me no like. Me call you Missy Coyote. Like Missy Coyote more so. Bloody name, not pretty.
Bloody name pretty to coyote. Coyote like blood. Make grow strong. Keep hair pretty in winter. Hunk no like blood in winter?
Hunk eat co-op dog food in winter. No need blood.
What means co-op dog food?
No can explain. Too complicated.
Why Hunk here? Not at people place with many building and house with chicken.
Hank get mad at people. Quit job. People no understand. Hank no more guard chicken. Hank follow outlaw trail.
Outlaw trail dangerous. Live out in wild. Coyote around. Coyote not like Hunk.
I decided it was time to turn on some of my charm. Just a little at a time. Didn't want to give the girl the full load all at once. Missy Coyote, like Hank? She smiled. Mercy. Made me weak in the legs again.
Missy think Hunk cute.
Oh, heck, really? Me cute?
But other coyote not think so. Missy have brother named Scrunch. Not like ranch dog. Hurt if fine.
You're Scrunch's sister? She nodded. I knew all about Scrunch, the most notorious outlaw coyote in the whole country. He was big, mean, and utterly heartless. He'd probably kill more chickens and barn cats than any three coyotes on the ranch. And it was common knowledge that he'd kill a stray dog just for the sport of it. As a matter of fact, me and Scrunch had met on the field of battle and had fought to a draw, which I had considered a victory. That was back in the winter, January, as I recall. Yes, it was, because we fought in the snow. Scrunch was a real thug. How can a nice girl like you have such a bad brother? She shook her head.
Hunk, be careful. Maybe go back ranch. Not safe here.
I leaned forward and nuzzled her under the chin with the end of my nose. I ain't scared. Hank ready to fight whole family for Missy. I noticed that she was trembling. Thought maybe it was a result of my charm. Then she whispered,
Hunk in trouble. Whole family here.
Huh? I looked around. She wasn't kidding. The whole dang family had arrived. We were surrounded by lean-limbed, long-haired, scruffy-tailed, yeller-eyed, slack-jawed, hungry-looking coyotes. I was in trouble, fellers, and had a feeling that a wreck was coming. Missy's old man was the chief. His full proper name was Many Rabbit Gut Eatin' Full Moon, which in coyote culture was regarded as a beautiful name. Can you imagine a mother saddling an innocent pup with a name like that? Shows just how backward them coyotes were. Anyway, nobody used his full name except at rituals and war councils and such. Mostly they called him Chief Gut, or just plain Gut. Gut was an old devil, skinny. You could count every rib he owned on both sides. Looked like a one-way plow with a wet blanket thrown over the discs. Walked with a limp, packed his right front leg, which was missing a couple of toes. Had a long scar down the front of his face, nose was all beat up, and his left ear looked as though the rats had been chewing on it. He came limping over to where I was, and strangely enough, he had a smile on his face. Made me feel a little better about things. Aha! Daughter catch dog! Coyote girl, pretty, huh? Mighty pretty, yes she is. You like, huh? He turned to the other coyotes. Dog like girl who drank blood. Think she pretty? They roared at that. Got a good chuckle out of it. I must have missed the joke. Old Gut turned back to me. Oh, foolish dog to chase coyote girl into canyon. Very, very foolish you leave ranch. Come here without Big Hat and Boom Boom. I'm doing my best to translate this conversation from the coyote dialect, but maybe I ought to pause here to clear up some of the terminology. Big Hat was the coyote word for cowboy, and Boom Boom meant gun. Thought I'd better get that straight. I mean, you can't expect everyone to be fluent in three or four or five languages. I was, but that's just part of my job. One of the many things a top-notch cow dog had to master before he could take over a ranch and run it the way it ought to be run. I might also mention that I had a fair knowledge of the coon, possum, and badger dialects, and I could bluff my way through in chicken and prairie dog. Actually, chicken is pretty simple. Chickens are so dumb that they only have about half a dozen words in the whole language, and three of those words are just different ways of saying, help! All right, we've got that out of the way. Now, where was I? Old Gut turned to me. Oh, foolish dog to chase coyote girl into canyon, Barry! We've already heard that. Now you in big trouble, huh? You do good job, daughter. Catch dog.
Not catch dog. Dog help. Save life. Name Hunk. Hunk friend.
The old man scowled.
Hunk not friend. Fight coyote many time away from chicken. He chicken dog.
Chicken dog. Them was fighting words. If Missy hadn't been there to hold me back, I might have cleaned house on the whole coyote nation. Me and old man Gut went nose to nose and were growling at each other when I caught some motion out of the corner of my eye. I looked. It was Scraunch. He was crouched low, walking real slow. Hair along his backbone was bristled all the way from the back of his neck to the tip of his tail. Had a snarl on his mouth that showed two rows of long white fangs. He was a big dude. Tall, brawny, raw-boned, and so ugly that a guy could hardly stand to look him in the face. Kinda throwed a chill into me. Old man got backed off.
Now what you say, chicken dog? You scared, betcha, huh?
I swallowed and tried to keep my knees from going out on me.
No, I ain't scared. You not scared, Scraunch? You not smart? Scraunch, very bad fellow.
I glanced at Missy. Tell your brother that I don't like the look on his face. She told him. He stopped, and a roar of laughter went up from the other coyotes. When they quit yipping and howling, I went on.
Tell your brother that if he takes one more step, I'm gonna use him to sweep this whole pasture. And when I get done, there won't be a cactus bush left in Ochiltree County.
She told him. He grinned and took another step.
Tell your brother that I saw that and I won't forget it.
Missy shook her head.
Not talk so big. Make Scraunch mad. Big mouth make big trouble.
One of the first rules you learn in security work is an old piece of cowdog wisdom. Never bite if you can bark. Never bark if you can growl. Never growl if you can talk. And never talk if you can run. In other words, when the odds are against you, the best kind of fight is none at all. That was my strategy, see? The longer I talked, the longer I could stay alive. And who knows, I might just say something that would change Scraunch's mind about tearing me limb from limb, though I didn't have a great deal of hope. He was standing maybe 4 or 5 feet in front of me. A hush had fallen over the tribe, and all eyes were on the two of us. He sat down and leered at me. And I mean leered, brother. That was no ordinary grin. I leered right back. Tried to, anyway, though I'd never really perfected a good leer. Then I turned to Missy again. Tell your brother that I've changed my mind. If he can mind his manners and act right, we'll forget the whole thing. Missy started to speak, but Scraunch lifted his paw for silence.
Not speak through sister. You have talk, you speak Scraunch.
All right. You asked for it. You've really done it this time. I was prepared to forget the whole thing and just let it slide, but by George, if you're gonna keep pushing and mouthing off, well, hey, this could get serious. Come on!
He didn't move.
Come on! Get off your duff and let's settle this thing once and for all. I'm tired of waiting. I mean, I came out here to get you, Scraunch. Oh, I know you thought I was messing around with your sister. Ha! That's just what I wanted you to think. It was a trap, Scraunch. And you walked right into it. Oh, what a dumb brute you are. I didn't think you'd actually fall for it. I never dreamed it would be this easy. All these months I've been waiting to even the score between us, and I never dreamed that I could just walk into the canyon and you'd come to me. Speaking of silence, them coyotes were silent. Guess they couldn't believe what they were hearing. Scraunch glanced at Chief Gut, and Gut glanced at Missy, and Missy glanced at me. And I gave her a smile and a wink. Scraunch stood up, and so did the hair on the back of his neck.
Scrunch kill chicken dog.
You think so? You actually think that? Ha! Holy cats, where have you been all your life? You've been up in the Bojacks too long, Scrunch. You're so country it hurts. I mean, you're pathetic. I almost feel sorry for you. I took a step towards him. You still don't understand, do you? It still hadn't soaked through your thick barbarian skull that you've walked right into my trap. Huh, I can't believe this.
Scrunch cut his eyes towards old Gut.
Scrunch killed chicken dog.
But there was a little less conviction this time. Okay. I marched right up to him until there weren't more than a couple of inches between our noses.
If you're bound and determined to go through with this, let's get it on. But first, I want you to do something. I want you to ask yourself this question. Why would a smart dog walk right into the middle of a bunch of coyotes in their country? Put your little brain to work on that, Scrunch. If you figure it out, you'll know the secret. I'll give you 30 seconds.
Nobody moved. There wasn't a sound, not a whisper. 15 seconds went by real slow. I was in the process of checking out the escape routes when an old woman coyote, Scrunch's mother as it turned out, broke the circle and came out to him.